The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merritt, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
From the crossroads of Merrick Avenue and Sunrise Highway in beautiful Merrick, Long Island, New York, this is WGBB Sports Talk New York, 95.9 FM, 1240 AM. I'm your host, Mike Padone, normally joined by Chris Caputo, but he is on assignment, which we will talk about in just a moment. The number here is 516-623-1240. Again, that's 516-623-1240 if you'd like to call in this evening. With the weather being so hot, it's kind of an odd choice. I'm sure you're going to be thinking that we are going with hockey this evening, but we have some exciting stuff with the New York Islanders having the number one overall pick in the NHL draft this year. But first, before that, we're going to be joined by former NHL goaltender. His name is Darren Pupa. He starred with the Buffalo Sabres, had a little bit of a cup of coffee with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then finished strong with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But he's a New York guy in terms of his play for the most part in his career, so we'll be having him on to talk about the playoffs and just about the NHL in general. And, you know, definitely kind of a, as I said, maybe an odd way to go tonight. But when we're thinking about baseball, boy, that's a tough one. And if Chris comes on later, his assignment this weekend was a self-imposed assignment. He decided to make the trip out to Pittsburgh to watch a three-game set with the Pirates. And for those of you who are stat people, the Mets were outscored by the most runs in a three-game series in their history this weekend out in Pittsburgh. And that, to me, is just incredibly shocking. But to digress, we will also talk Islanders with our normal Islanders beat reporter, John Santamaria, the man we call Johnny Sticks, and he'll be joining. He was also, ironically enough, out in Pittsburgh as well, watching the Mets. So I'm sure if we don't hear from Chris, Johnny can fill us in on that debacle that took place out in Pittsburgh. You know, NBA playoffs, NBA draft, we'll talk a little bit of that as well. Cooper Flagg, everybody's number one pick, you know, went as such. Not really many surprises in the first round of the draft. Knicks didn't have a pick until number 50. They swapped their pick and with the LA Clippers and went 51. You know, again, it's more about trades at this point and how they're going to build the roster. NBA summer leagues start tomorrow. I believe the first one is either in Utah or Phoenix. And then later on, 2 weeks down the road, they wind up going out to Las Vegas. And I've said this before to many basketball fans. If you are available and have the time during the summer, try your best to get out to Las Vegas. About 10 years ago, I went out to a scouting, it was kind of like a scouting clinic combine, and we were able to get in for a couple of games at the Thomas and Mack Center at UNLV to watch the Summer League. In fact, I watched Giannis Antetokounmpo. I watched Giannis's first professional game. Now, little did I know at that time that he would wind up being, you know, probably a consensus Hall of Famer. But they do a great, and I mean a great job in Vegas with that summer league. And you will see, you know, players from the past trying to hang on. Most draft picks are there. Cooper Flagg, you know, I don't know how much he'll play. Normally the number one guys, you know, the first 5 to 10 lottery guys don't play all that much. They'll get a game or two in. I know Wemby, Victor Wembanyama, a couple of years back, I think he played 2 games. They always come up with some kind of mysterious, you know, ankle injury or some kind of, you know, back. It's just to get the guys, get their feet wet, sell a few tickets. But ironically, and again, I use that word, you know, a lot, ironically enough, in Las Vegas, they basically sell out. They have 2 gyms there. They have the arena, which seats about 14,000. Then they have a practice gym next door, which seats about 3,000. And they just pack that place. And whether you like Las Vegas or not, I'm not really a Las Vegas guy. You don't have to worry about the weather. I mean, you're not outside. You're going around. It's just a great great spot if you can do that. But with the temperature having been in the 100s this week, we're going to switch to hockey, cool you down a little bit, talking, you know, as I mentioned, Islanders a little bit later on. Had the number one pick and wound up making a big trade to get back in, had three picks in the first round. But as I mentioned, we are going to be joined, and we are right now, by former NHL goaltender with the Buffalo Sabres, Toronto Maple Leafs, and Tampa Bay Lightning, Darren Puppa. Darren, Mike Wadone here on Long Island. Welcome to the program. How are you tonight?
Hey, Mike. Nice to hear from you. Everything's good.
Fantastic. Now, Darren, correct me if I'm wrong. You're down in Tampa. Is that correct?
Yeah, I got here in 93,
and you never left.
I'm still here. It's a pretty good place to live.
Well, I'll tell you, up here in New York this past week, I was just talking about, we were in the triple digits in the 100s with a lot of humidity. So, you know, not unfamiliar to us is the heat that you have normally in Tampa Bay. But this we feel is the best time to talk hockey. And, you know, NHL draft was big here with the Islanders having the first pick. I have an interesting, it's not really a connection, Darren, but I'll tell you, I watched you play a lot when I was younger, when you first started out, and we'll kind of get to that in a minute. But you're from Kirkland Lake, Ontario. Growing up, I assume you were a Toronto Maple Leafs fan?
I was actually a Montreal Canadiens fan.
Oh, boy, okay.
Ken Dryden was my go-to guy at the time.
Well, that's no surprise.
I won a lot of Stanley Cups, so it was pretty easy to be a fan of Montreal.
Absolutely.
But I was a Mike Pomotier fan, too.
Oh, sure.
Toronto was my second favorite team at the time.
Well, I can tell you, as an Islander fan growing up, those two guys just absolutely killed us. Until Dryden retired, we all breathed a sigh of relief here on Long Island when he did. And right before the Islanders went on their cup run, Mike Pomotier just stood on his head the year we won the President's Trophy. So those two guys I had a very large respect for, but, yeah, tremendous, tremendous goalkeepers.
Yes, and they're a lot of fun to watch, especially Pomotier. He's a left-handed goalie.
Just like yourself.
I was a left-handed goalie, so I took it to heart to watch him, and he was definitely a fun goalie to watch.
Yeah.
Ken, when he first started, was all over the place, too, and then he kind of settled into stand-up goalie. But I had fun watching him growing up, and when I was a kid playing in the backyard or on the rinks, I was Ken Dryden or Mike Pomotier at all times.
Absolutely. So when you played, you know, and you started to really get into the game and find your position as a goaltender, did you kind of model your game after those two guys?
I did. I took pieces of both and put them together. Dryden, when he first started, was a really good butterfly guy coming out of Cornell. And I definitely learned a lot of lessons watching him in his first few years. I was young at the time, six or seven, so, you know, I was very, very into hockey. And we had the 19-inch TV, black and white, but you couldn't, you know. Nowadays, you got the 85-inch, 90-inch, 100-inch TVs. You can watch guys a little bit closer, but I still remember them very, very, very vividly.
Absolutely. Like I said, they both, but especially Kenny Dryden gave everyone here in the New York area nightmares. He gave everyone nightmares. He was amazing. And when he made the decision to retire so young, I'm sure, you know, pretty much yourself and all of Canada kind of scratched their head.
I was just going to say that. he had plenty of good years left in him, but he had other things to do in life. And when you get older, you understand a little bit more that he was on to bigger and better things.
Sure. Well, he wound up being the color man on probably the most famous American hockey broadcast, the 1980 Olympic Games, when the U.S. upset Russia. And he again, I think he took to it just like he took to being a goalkeeper. He was just tremendous. But yeah, it would have been great to see what would have happened with him and the Canadians going forward. But back to you now. You decide to go to RPI. I believe you were drafted before you left by Buffalo, and you decide to go to RPI. Was that a decision kind of based on academics as well as hockey?
I was definitely based on academics. My whole family are basically engineers, I was going to school to be an engineer.
Well,
my cousin was the head coach at Denver University.
Okay.
And I was supposed to go there. I had the recruiting trip, and it was a tough call. They said that with the schedule they had that I couldn't take engineering there, so it was a tough call to make that call to say, hey, I want to take engineering, but you won't let me, so I'm going to make the decision to go to RPI because there was plenty of engineers on the hockey team at the time.
Well, obviously a great decision, and you had an outstanding career there. I believe you only played two seasons, but 1985 NCAA champions, correct?
Yes, that was a thrill. We still live it down. We still live it up with the team nowadays. We just got together for our 40th reunion. I think it's 40.
Yeah,
40. Who would have thought?
I'm sure it doesn't feel like 40.
And a lot of guys showed up for it, so it was a great time. It was nice to see guys that you haven't seen in a long, long time.
Absolutely. So, looking at you, at your stats around that time, I mean, you win the 85 championship, and literally, within a couple of months, you're in Buffalo, and they decide to put you in net in November against the Edmonton Oilers, just to kind of, I guess, to see how you would react and how things were, and you wind up shutting out the Oilers 2-0.
I think they're just going to throw me. We're going to lose the game anyway, so they just throw me in there to see what was going to happen. But Edmonton, I think, was one of the greatest teams of all time, if not the greatest team of all time, and they're right in the middle of their four cups in 5 years. So I was a nervous time for me. I was walking around downtown Edmonton.
Yeah.
With a Walkman at the time, with a cassette player Walkman. I couldn't sleep, couldn't nap, I just knew I was going to get thrown to the wolves. Mm-hmm. So it was a very, very, very nervous time for me.
Yeah, at that time, there's no other team that they could have thrown you to that would have made you, I'm sure, any more nervous than the Edmonton Oilers, because they were just completely stacked. But in a game like that, Darren, I want to ask you, it's your first NHL game. Obviously, you played fantastic. How long does it take after the puck is dropped for you to feel like you're just in another game, or did that ever happen within that game at all?
You think you got to get that first shot. As soon as you touch the puck, get that first shot. If it takes a minute or if it takes 10 minutes, you're just not comfortable until you feel the puck. So with them, they had a lot of shots, so it didn't take long for them to get shots on me.
Absolutely. Well, you obviously did a fantastic job, and something that I'm sure everyone who knows the game and knows you brings up, and that's something that can never be taken away. So that really 86-87, you go to Rochester and you guys win the Calder Cup there. You're in the highest level. You're backstopping the Rochester Americans, or as we call them in upstate New York, the Amerks, and Calder Cup. So I mean, you have an NCAA championship, and 2 years later you're the starting goaltender for a Calder Cup winning team. So winning for you was second nature, I'm sure, at that point.
I won at every level. I won championships at every level. I just never got the Stanley Cup, but it was a big thrill to win for the Amherst. We played against a really good team in Sherbrooke, which was the Canadiens farm team. And
I'm sure they were stacked as well.
We went seven games, so it was a pretty stacked team. They were the highest scoring team in the league. And so we played pretty good, but it takes Game 7 in Sherbrooke, and we end up on the winning side of the Game 7, so it was a big thrill.
So I was mentioning before about, kind of a connection. So in 1988-89, I was 87-88, I was a freshman at SUNY Geneseo, not far from Rochester. So we used to go to a lot of games at the War Memorial there in Rochester. And if I remember correctly, I mean, the fan base in Western New York, especially in Rochester, was just insane for hockey. Do you remember anything about playing for the Amherst at that time, just, fan-wise?
Fan-wise, it was great. It was a great fan base. The city was a pretty big city for minor league teams, so it was more like an NHL feel than just an AHL feel. But we had a good, always had good crowds, and we had a good team, and we had a lot of older guys that were still playing, and we.
Now, when you got to Buffalo, you were playing behind Tom Barrasso, if I remember that correctly, and he gets traded, and then you become the number one goaltender. When he was traded, was that something that you kind of saw coming, or obviously you were ready to step into that role because you did, but was that something that surprised you, or did you kind of see it coming?
I was a total surprise. I know Tommy didn't have a great start to that year, but, you know, he was the man in Buffalo, and he won the Vezina in his rookie year. He came out of high school at 18.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was a quality goalie, and everybody knew that. So, to me, it was a total surprise that he was getting traded. I didn't really
see
that coming.
Yeah. Well,
I think in the long term it was between me and him, and he was the one that got picked up from Buffalo to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and he wound up having, you know, just a stellar career with Pittsburgh and beyond.
Hall of Fame career. Yeah,
absolutely. Once again, here on Sports Talk New York, WGBB, we're happy to be joined by Darren Pupa, former Sabres, Toronto Maple Leafs, and Tampa Bay Lightning goaltender. So, Darren, just real quick before we get on to just some general questions about the position and kind of what you see in hockey right now. 1989-90, you have a great season. You lead the NHL with 31 wins out of 56 games. You're a fan favorite up there in Buffalo. And then late in the 93 season, you get traded to Toronto. So here's another trade. You know, you were saying about how Tommy Barrasso was surprised. Were you surprised when the trade came to Toronto?
I was not surprised at all.
Oh, okay.
I knew the writing was on the wall. We had Dominic Hasek there, and John Mucker was there, and they had a chance to get Grant Fuhr, who had all the Stanley Cups with the Edmonton Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, John Mucker was assistant coach with the Oilers at the time. So
he was going to bring his guy.
You know, he was basically his guy, and obviously another Hall of Famer.
Well, I mean, that's – if you have to get traded, you know, behind Hasek and Grant Fuhr, I mean, that's no – there's no shame in that for sure. But you go to Toronto. Were you hoping to stay with Toronto, you know, a little bit long term, because you wound up – going to Florida, but then you were flipped to Tampa Bay in the expansion draft.
I was hoping to stay with Toronto. You know, with Toronto, you feel like you're like a Hollywood star.
Yeah.
You know, there's no better place to play hockey than Toronto. And I was expecting to stay there for a while. We had a great team. We went to the semifinals. We lost to L.A., and Gretzky scored a hat-trick in Game 7.
Oh, yes.
To beat us out at home 5-4. So, you know, I was expecting to stay around for a while, but with the expansion draft, you can only protect one goalie,
right.
And Felix Potvin was the guy, and he was a rookie, and they weren't going to let him go.
So in your career, I mean, you've shared teams and shared the crease with some unbelievable goalkeepers. And so, as we said, you wind up going to Tampa Bay, expansion team. You know, hockey in Florida, obviously so different than Toronto and you know, the greatest place to play. At the beginning in Tampa Bay there, what was the fan base like there? Did people have to learn about the game, or was — I know there's a lot of transplanted Northeasterners and New Yorkers down there. Were you pleasantly surprised by your beginning time there in Tampa?
It was a totally 180 from Toronto Maple Leafs.
Okay.
You know, they knew nothing about hockey.
Yeah.
Tampa knew nothing about hockey. You know, they had a fan base that came out to the fairgrounds. Remember when I played for Toronto, we were dressing — the dressing room was a little small, so we had to dress outside.
Yeah.
I remember dressing with the elephants. So it was a different experience coming to Tampa.
Yeah, because Tampa...
Toronto, you can't go anywhere without people knowing who you are, even though I was there only for 4 months.
Absolutely.
Tampa, still to this day, nobody really knows who you are.
Well, it really, I'll tell you, you know, I'm a couple of years younger than you, but not much. It really shocked me when the NHL decided to really expand into Florida like they did with the Panthers and the Lightning. But both teams obviously have done fantastic, and you helped that franchise in Tampa Bay to their first playoff experience. I believe that was against the Flyers, if I'm correct, and you took them the limit.
Yeah, that was a great experience for me. Problem was I got hurt during the series and hurt my back, and I couldn't really play at the level I was playing at that year. So it came down to just an injury that was unfortunate for me. But we gave them a run for their money. We were up 2-1 in the series, but we just didn't finish it off.
And unfortunately, that back injury kind of stuck you with you, correct, for the rest of your career, and ultimately was responsible for you retiring, correct?
Correct. You know, I had surgery on it, but it was never the same as it was before surgery. They say that, but you got to live it, and I lived it.
Yeah, and for any professional athlete, but especially a goaltender in the NHL, if your back is cranky and you rely so much on movement and anticipation, it's just brutal, I'm sure. And just living everyday life is not easy too. Does it unfortunately kind of still stick with you a little bit, and even in that Florida heat?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, it's never going to get any better, but I'm trying to prevent it from getting worse.
Yeah,
I see a chiropractor every week, and he puts me back together. So. Okay. I try to live life and do whatever I can to enjoy the days and stuff. But at the end of the day, I just don't want the back to limit me and what I can do at my age. Mm-hmm.
Well, I saw you posted on Instagram the other day that you were back out on the ice. You had the equipment on, and I'm sure that was great. So are you able to at least, you know, skate a little bit?
Yeah, I do goalie coaching and trying to get the equipment back on. I played an alumni game in 2019, and then COVID hit and kind of slowed me down a little bit. But I'm getting back in shape and putting the pads back on.
All right.
Hopefully we'll do some alumni games. Try to stay young at this age.
Yes, absolutely. What do you do besides the coaching? Are you a golfer? Do you just kind of enjoy the lifestyle down there in Florida with the weather? How do you pass the time besides coaching?
I sell real estate. I'm working on a book, working on a journal, and writing stories. I'm working on that. I got my Pupa Academy for goaltender development, advising goalies and doing some private lessons. And like I said, do some goalie coaching, get some content out there and instructional videos, trying to take your game to the next level.
That's fantastic. I mean, I certainly... You know, YouTube is fantastic, and the videos you're talking about, and you know, even for kids up here in the north who are looking to, you know, improve their game, or I mean, everybody here eventually, Darren, heads south. So, and I'm sure since you first started in Tampa Bay, that the interest and the knowledge in the game in South Florida has just exploded.
Oh, it's a great town now. It's a hockey town. You know, when I first got here, it was all football. That's all I talk about was football, but hockey now is equal to football in this town, which you never would have thought in a million years if that would happen. But it is, and it comes down to ownership. Mr. Vinnick changed the whole ideology, the whole concept of hockey in Tampa. He made it a priority and, you know, put the money into it and advertised it and got people involved. And as you said, more people are moving down here every year that are from the north that know hockey. Even if they go to the game and they're not a Lightning fan, they're an Islander fan or a Ranger fan,
absolutely,
Philadelphia fan, or a Toronto fan or a Montreal fan.
Well, last year I was in Tampa. I was going on a cruise, and we drove in right past the arena. From the outside, it's absolutely beautiful, and they did a spectacular job with that.
Yeah, they put a lot of money into it, and I think it's one of the best rinks in the NHL. By far, you don't get too many rinks on the waterfront, but they do in Tampa. And it's a big part of the downtown reconstruction project. And Tampa is now a city which got some life going on at night. When I first got here in 93, you go downtown to go to a game, and all you see was tumbleweeds after coming through the street.
Yeah, and now they've really upgraded for sure. I just want to ask you a general question about the game of hockey, since you you played and retired in the 90s. Do you feel the game itself has changed in terms of style of play, or you know, is it drastic, or is it just little things here and there? You would know best as a former NHL player.
Well, if you go back 20, 30 years, it's pretty drastic.
Yes.
But it's a little bit every year adds up to being drastic. I think it's a faster game. It's not, well, Florida's kind of proved that you can play physical and win championships. So they're bringing back that part of the game a little bit, which went away for a long time. But it seems like physicality is important to win the Stanley Cup. So teams are starting to build their teams to be bigger and tougher after the years of going smaller and faster.
Have you this with Buffalo and Tampa? You know, I know you live in Tampa and you're there and you probably get to see them a lot. Do you follow the Sabres as well in terms of, you know, how they're playing? And they struggled a little bit. But this year they started to make, you know, a little bit of ground. Are you able to follow the Sabres as much as you do the Lightning?
I do. You know, with the TV today, you get every game on TV, so you get to watch them. I follow the Sabres and Lightning pretty closely, and the Maple Leafs. You know, my three teams I play for. I try to keep up on what's going on. And, you know, it's been 14 long years in Buffalo not making the playoffs, but they got some really good talent. So
it's
just a matter of time until they put it together.
And I feel, you know, Lindy Ruff, I believe, you know, he's the man to bring them. He knows Buffalo. You know, he's from, played a lot of years there. And it's good for New York. And that's when we were talking off the air about, you know, having you on, because we're a Long Island station, but we talk all things New York. And especially the Buffalo Bills, football wise, we've been kind of dry down here with the Giants and the Jets. So it's good for everybody here in New York when the Sabres are good too. You know, I love watching them. And like I told you, you know, my connection, but, finally, with the position of goaltender, you know, not many stand-up guys anymore. Everything has kind of gone through, you know, in evolution as well. What do you teach when you bring a kid in who's got some talent, who you think maybe can do something? How do you work with them style-wise?
Well, they pretty much have style already, because if you watch NHL or if you watch other goalies, you know, everybody's kind of copying each other.
Yeah.
So the butterfly is obviously the number one thing. But it was back in my day, the butterfly was a big deal too. But they just kind of like went to a pad now that you can't really stand up, because you can't really stop the puck with your feet.
Right.
So you got to go down and make the shots when you're down on your... with your pads and stuff.
You mentioned equipment, and I just like to kind of finish up with this. So when you first started playing, you know, you had the helmet and the cage, and then you did kind of, if I remember correctly, move on to more of the mask and the small cage, and then with that type of equipment, was that a big change for you, and was that a huge upgrade when you changed to that, or did you go back to the cage? How did you feel when that kind of came into play in the NHL?
That was a glorious day when they came out with the new helmets. You know, if you used to get hit in the head with the helmet and the cage on, you'd always get cut, and you'd always get bruised, and, you know, you'd ring your bell or whatever they called it back then. But with the new helmets, you didn't get cut. Mm-hmm. That was a huge upgrade.
And I'm sure the sight line for you on the ice was better as well.
Yeah, you can see the puck a little better. Everybody went to that way except for maybe Hasek stayed with the cage and the helmet for a while, but eventually everybody changed to the new style helmets.
Well, I didn't play very well and didn't play very long, but I played a little goalie when I was a kid, and I loved the masks at that time. Like you said, Kenny Dryden, I was a Chico Resch guy. I mean, his mask was awesome. So the new equipment has definitely changed things, and there's certainly no going back. Last thing, Darren, and we appreciate all the time you gave us tonight, just before we let you go, you mentioned all the great players in Buffalo. What's the final piece you think that they need to kind of get over the hump and start contending in the playoffs?
Well, they got the pieces together. Just got chemistry in the dressing room, and they're trying to get a little tougher. They've been called soft over this last few years, so they're actually made some upgrades in the trades. They got rid of Paterka.
Mm-hmm.
This is very offensive, but they got Doan and Kesselring back that will add to the toughness of the team.
Absolutely.
Their first draft pick, number 9 overall, Mirko, 6'6", big defenseman, right shooting guy. You know, they're trying to put the pieces together. It's tough to build a winning organization. It takes time.
Yeah.
It's been 14 years, so their time is now. So
absolutely.
Kind of getting a little desperate at this point. You know, they can't wait to not make playoffs, so they got to try to put the pieces together right now. And I think they're at least making trades and doing stuff to hopefully make the team better.
Absolutely. Well, Darren, again, we can't thank you enough for coming on and giving us some great perspective on your career, how the NHL has changed, and the team here in New York, what they need to do, and your experience in Florida. Darren Pupa, thanks again. All the best, and hopefully we can have you on another time.
All right, great. Thanks, Mike.
All right, all
have
the best.
Day.
Stay well. All right.
You too.
That was Darren Pupa, former NHL goaltender. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with John Santa Maria on the other side of the break here on Sports Talk New York.
You are listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the second half of WGBB Sports Talk New York here on 95.9 FM, 1240 AM. I'm your host, Mike Wadone, again flying solo tonight as Chris Caputo. Cappy is in Pittsburgh having, unfortunately, watched the three-game set with the Mets, and as well as John Santa Maria was there watching that. But we're going to talk hockey. We're going to talk some positive stuff here with John about the New York Islanders, keeping with our hockey theme tonight. They had three picks in the first round. We knew they had the number one overall, but then they made a big trade. So we're going to welcome in John. Johnny Santa Maria, Johnny Sticks, how you doing? Are you in transit from Pittsburgh?
No, I'm sitting in the hotel. We're leaving in the morning.
Okay, all right. Smart man, because after that, after watching that, I'm sure driving home tonight would have been pretty tough.
No, actually flying home tomorrow morning.
Oh, flying. Good.
Today was a visit to the sites, took a look at PP&G Arena, home
good
of the
man.
Penguins. So got a look at some of the sites, took a visit to the Steelers Stadium. So made the rounds around the city today.
All right, so it wasn't
the game yesterday.
Wasn't all bad then?
No.
Okay, good. Just a quick question on the. I haven't been to the baseball stadium there. I hear it's one of the tops. What's your opinion on that?
Oh, 100%. I'd recommend to anybody coming back here. For a stadium that's almost 25 years old, you wouldn't think it's brand new.
Yeah,
and the area is really. It's a good neighborhood. It's a good area. Definitely one I'd recommend for anybody to come to.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's a very underrated city. You know, I used to spend a lot of time there. with basketball clinics, and we would go in the fall, and we just used to walk around the city, and that's when Three Rivers was there. But it's just a great spot, a lot of fun, and as you mentioned, safe. So let's
probably no longer than like a weekend trip. I wouldn't go past that.
Yeah. There's not a tremendous amount of sights to see. I can hear you. So hockey. We just had Darren Poop on. He gave us some great insights. I was a goalie as a kid and just loved having him on. So we spent a lot of Sabres and Tampa Bay Lightning time, but now it's Islanders time. Had the number one pick, but before the draft even took place, little sign and trade. Out of the defensive ranks with Noah Dobson going to the Canadiens for the 16th and 17th pick. What did you think of that deal?
I was part of me felt a little surprised that they didn't want to lock Noah Dobson up and build around him, but if the ask was what it was, I talked to a few people and asked other people's opinions about this, so it wasn't necessarily the money when you look at it. Even if you got to 9, if the Islanders wanted to go to 8.5, 9, whatever, 9.5, if they felt that there was a point where we're not going to break the bank, that's not even the concern. The concern is always the years.
Right.
Are you going to hold up for a contract like that? The Islanders have had a hard time with that recently. I don't want to put Darsh in that category because he was not here when the Engvall contract and Scott Mayfield's contract were given out. But there are some, and this is where I think the one new piece of the CBA is going to help a lot of these teams getting those 6-year contracts. The one thing that they're going to look to agree on when the players ratify the CBA, that there's going to be no more of these 8-year deals. I think that's going to make a huge difference, but you don't have that situation right now. If this was that case and that contract and that CBA was done and you were able to give him 6 years, sure, that's not the problem. But 8, that's a bit of an asking point.
Yeah, absolutely. So they wind up trading him for two number one picks, 16 and 17. I had heard... Yeah. Oh, yes. And Emil Heinemann, who's a prospect as well, and really the talk was that they wanted to take the 16 and 17 and see if they could move up. Do you think that was something that maybe they had kind of something unofficially in place, or was that a little bit of a pipe dream? Because that's tough to do, to move into the top 10 or you know, to go to for Jack Higgins to bring him with 16 and 17.
No,
what are your thoughts on that?
I don't really – part of me thinks, I think it would have been a great story to have. I think it would have been – I think the second best option for Higgins happened, that he does end up with the Bruins. He gets to play near BC where he goes to college.
Right.
So the second best option was that for him. No, and I think, honestly, he wanted to do what was best for the team. Mm-hmm. I think what was best for the team is putting some more resources in place. Obviously, we don't know. We know what these three picks are based on what we've read them do in junior hockey and over in Europe. But they are. Matthew Schaefer's not even 18 years old yet. There's still a lot of development to do. And if anything, with what was done, he had a very good draft, very good first draft. The pressure now is going to come on the front office, the new coaching staff in Bridgeport, and potentially other levels in junior level to get these guys developed and ready to go to the NHL, because that's when we're going to see the final result.
Absolutely.
If Matthew Schaefer makes it up here in about 2 years and looks like he's got something, then Darsh had a very good first draft. And the same goes with all these other guys. Anybody from round 2, 3, and beyond, I look at that no different, honestly, than a baseball draft.
Yeah, it's
maybe three of them will be something. Most of them, probably, you may never see them again.
No, that's a great point, because the later rounds of an NHL draft, it's very hit and miss. They're very rarely do you strike gold on that. You mentioned Matthew Schaefer, number one overall pick, big defenseman, not even 18. But watching him in his pre-draft interviews and how he handled himself at the draft seems very wise beyond his years. Has an amazing story. I thought the Islanders did a great thing, you know, putting the breast cancer awareness patch. If people don't know, he lost his mom to breast cancer. Just an impressive kid, though, huh?
Yes, and that's what the Islanders are always known for building. We're going to talk about the other guy. We're going to talk about culture and all that stuff. That's what they're known for. That's what they do well. They want good people in their organization.
Yes.
They don't want no more, and everybody knows this. Rick DiPietro, when he was here, was not the most friendliest person. But very friendly now as a talk radio host.
Oh, yeah.
So they want to build good chemistry. They want to have good people in this organization, top to bottom, and they continuously do. So the hope is that continue that trend and build them, get these guys ready to go. And it seems there's a lot of excitement with rookie camp coming this week, and it's only a good glimpse of the future. And then remember, they have two first-round picks coming next year. So Josh will already start his Islanders tenure over the first 2 years with five first-round picks. Yeah. That's a lot more chips than Lou Lamoriello had in however long he was here, 7 years, eight years as the general manager, because he traded a lot of those away.
Right.
Now he could really start building a continuous foundation.
So it's going to take a little patience for the Islander fan base, but if you know the game, and as you do, and many of the Islander, most of the Islander fans know, they're building correctly with number 16. They go and pick up Victor Eklund from Sweden. He dropped a little bit. He was projected in most drafts as a top 10 pick.
And his brother's on the Sharks, for those of you who don't know.
Right. I was excited about that pick.
Yeah, and all of that is, it's now the work comes from the coaching staff, the work comes from the players. Now you got to get ready to play NHL hockey. Playing in Europe is very different. Playing junior hockey is very different. And that's where I think Patrick Waugh staying is where he could really be on in line with the general manager.
Right.
And that's where Rocky Thompson going to Bridgeport is a very good move, because Rocky Thompson, new head coach in Bridgeport, has experience at all three levels. Very successful junior hockey coach when he called it up. He's been in the minor leagues in the AHL. And then the last couple of years, he was on the bench next to John Tortorella in Philadelphia. So that's a lot of experience going to Bridgeport, and he's a young guy. It's not like this is a retrend coach. It's not like we're going to call Brent Thompson back. This is somebody with a little bit of experience, but maybe a different perspective on how to do player development.
Right, and if you want to bring some toughness to Bridgeport, which they desperately need, is there a better name than Rocky Thompson? I mean, he's got the name. He's got the resume. I mean, I have been pumped about Bridgeport, but I'm pumped about that too.
Yeah, and you know what? I honestly thought this was a great hire. I thought they were going to put Benoit DeRozier down there.
Yes.
So this way he could coach the same system Patrick Waugh was going to coach with the Islanders. But he felt it was more important to have DeRozier on the bench with him.
So the final pick, number 17 there, they go with big defenseman, young guys, again, Keshawn Atchison. And I watched some video on him. This guy, let me tell you, he's got an electric personality, but, man, can he throw his body around.
You know, he might be what they're looking for, like the physicality presence,
yes,
that like they were looking for out of Mayfield and Pellick when he's healthy. So it's always good. Maybe Schaefer could eventually quarterback a power play. And then maybe he could be one of the more physical players. You need a little bit of variety of defense. And now even at that position, with Noah Dobson gone, looks like Romanoff is going to work on an extension with him. Do they bring Tony DeAngelo back? That defense room is beginning to get deeper.
Right.
Between the draft, the prospects they have, and now what they're going to have on the big club.
Yeah, you're in
so
my mind on that.
A lot of excitement, a lot of good things to look at. And I think the fan base is good with the patience. I think people feel that they could potentially still compete for a playoff spot this year. But if it doesn't, I think everybody's going to be on par because there is now a direction.
Right. And you know what? I mean, sometimes you make a change in these organizations for a change for change's sake. I don't necessarily believe that was necessary, but I also think it was time for Lou Lamoriello, great hockey guy, you know, tremendous all around. He's had an amazing career, but it was time for some new blood, and I think, you know, any Islander fan, if a change was going to be made, especially with the number one pick, and as you said, you know, two more picks this year, two more in the first round, so it's three total, two more next year, the time was right.
Yeah, you know what you're getting out of him. And what you're getting out of Lou Lamoriello is somebody who wants to win now. And I think the way he thinks about hockey in the game is long. I think the game is long past him. So, and this would have been the case if he was still in New Jersey or anywhere else. I mean, Toronto pretty much forced him out probably for those reasons before he came to the Islanders.
Yeah.
That's why he probably didn't. That's why I think, well, now Brandon Shanahan's gone from there, but that's why I think he didn't last working for the Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Shanahan, you know, great name recognition, tremendous player. He was kind of rumored before Darsh was hired, but, you know, that didn't pan out either. And
no.
I feel good. I feel very good about
yeah,
where we're at.
I do, too. I do, too. And the one thing people are going to still ask, what's going to happen to Chris Lamoriello, who's thought, you know what, it just, that really doesn't matter. Because even if they got a contract extension, you could still be pro-scout.
Yes.
You could still be some sort of advisor doing a job just to, because you don't want to pay, you don't want them to sit home and do nothing. There's no salary cap for front office. We see that all the time. Mm-hmm. So everybody's just got to relax on that one, because if they don't want Chris Lamoriello in charge of Bridgeport, which it does not sound like he's going to be, they'll find something else for him to do.
Right, and if he's looking to move on to another spot, I mean, they did the right
thing.
That's why
I'm not even discussing that. Those are much easier to move out of organizations than it is coaches.
Oh, absolutely. So I just want to switch gears here for a second. As you mentioned, you were in Pittsburgh this weekend. It was a tough, and I'll say the word again, tough series for the Mets. But I'm told, and I think that you will probably confirm this, a lot of Met fans there this weekend.
Yes. A lot of Met fans made the trip. Chris was actually in three sections with Seven Line Army. They had three sections of fans.
Wow. So, I mean...
But hold on, what you don't know with the Seven Line is, you may not know this, they do their outings. You've heard about them. You've seen them at Citi Field.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen them at other ballparks. The Pirates are very supportive to them. They've done multiple outings here, I believe.
Okay.
There are some teams, the Yankees being one of them, who will not sell group sales to a big Mets group like that.
Yeah.
But then you got the Red Sox, who will be very quick to give three sections out to the Seven Line Army.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some teams around Major League Baseball who will not get involved with them. Like, I don't think they will ever be able to get an outing at Dodger Stadium if they tried.
Yeah, yeah. It would be an interesting trip for sure. But
they've done Philly.
Yes.
They've done Philly.
Which is literally sometimes taking your life in your hands down in Philly. I mean, the Philly fans, they're passionate, but you know, that's a fan base in football that booed Santa Claus. I mean, they're brutal to Met fans if you wear a hat,
no,
T-shirt.
I've been at Citizens Bank Park. The one thing that they do say to me,
okay,
they ask me, who do you root for in football? I said, Jets. I was like, they're fine. Don't go root for the Giants, the Cowboys, or the Commanders.
Smart answer, John.
I said, how about Jet fans coming in? They said, that's fine. There's no craziness. It's the Giant fans. It's the Cowboy fans. It's the Commander fans. So they said, Jets, Patriots have been there. They played the Patriots many, even in Super Bowls. They're not bothered the least bit by Patriots fans.
For sure. So, again, we're joined by John Santa Maria out in Pittsburgh. We talked a lot of Islanders. We're going to continue here with the Mets quickly. If you want to jump in, phone lines open, 516-623-1240. Again, that's 516-623-1240. John, in person watching the Mets, I know it's difficult from the stands, but did they appear as flat as they looked on TV? Was it a matter of just the pitching was so horrid? I know there was a rain delay last night.
Yeah, the pitching looks shot.
Okay.
The pitching looks like you could tell they're running out of arms. And let's be honest, this does happen every year to a lot of teams.
Of course.
The Dodgers had the stretch, too, when the Mets were in L.A. a couple weeks ago, the Dodgers were missing a good chunk of their bullpen. They're just starting to get guys back.
Mm-hmm.
This is only Frankie Montas' second start. Yes, it was not good today. But let's see. He was great the other night in the five innings.
Yeah.
Senga's still out. Sherman is due back. I'm thinking now, with the way he got, because he had a setback in his rehab, he's going to do one more. Maybe he gets stuck fully at a star break.
Yeah.
Griffin Canning getting hurt was a big blow. They're going to have to go. They're probably going to have to go out this year. They didn't give up a lot to get Blackburn last year. They're going to probably have to spend a little bit and get a big pitcher in here, because this team is very, this team healthy. This team on all cylinders, I believe, to win a World Series. I really, really, really feel that way.
You know, I definitely
the one thing they're going to have to do that they did not do in the offseason is go out and get that big game changer arm. And people, the writers have thrown out there, what about the idea of bringing Jacob DeGrom back and to finish if Texas is ready to move on from him? It sounds like a good idea. He's pitching very well this year. I am skeptical about giving up a big prospect to bring him home.
Yeah, me too. Like it, just with his history, I mean, it would be a great story. And if he's close to the DeGrom of old, I mean, that would be what a win-win. But it's tough to look at sacrificing some big prospects for a guy who just is so injury prone.
Because look at what happened when the Mets traded Scherzer to Texas.
Yeah.
The Mets ate the money. If Texas is willing to eat money, they're going to ask for, I'm just going to say, Drew Gilbert, the kid they got from Justin Verlander trade.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to ask for it. They're not going to ask. They're not going to take Brett Beaton back.
No.
They're not going to take Ronnie Mauricio. They may want Acuna back.
Yeah.
Not probably. The likelihood of that is doubtful because they don't really have a position for him. That's why I think they were quick to move him out.
Mm-hmm.
But if they feel they need an outfielder, they could ask for one of those guys. And I'm personally not ready to do that.
So generally, you know, these big trades happen kind of right around the trade deadline, which is a ways from now. Do you think the Mets need to make a deal sooner than later in that respect?
Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. See, I'm not real patient on this one, John. I think they should do it ASAP. Only because just since Kodai Senga went down, I mean, obviously this swoon has coincided with that, but they just seem off, and I think they need to make not a trade for trade's sake, but get an arm in here that's going to give a little life.
Yeah. No. Of course, it's just what's always complicated with that at this time of the year. You also don't want to screw things up on your 40-man roster either.
Yeah.
So let's just say, for example, you make a trade now. They really are as bad as he looked yesterday in that second inning before he got pulled. After the rain delay, so I think that threw him off. You can't just DFA Paul Blackburn.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit harder to do that because you kind of need his arm right now.
Yeah.
So they got to make sure they also have guys on the way back, and that also includes Tyler McGill. Also out too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, people say it all the time, and it's really true. You can never have enough starting pitching. I mean, it's wild, the injuries. And you mentioned Griffin Canning. I mean, have you seen an Achilles? I mean, and the poor guy, you know, he was making a move, but he ruptured the thing, and he was having a fantastic year.
Yeah, and it's you know what? It's not even like you could say, well, we got guys. They have guys in AAA. They're just not ready for the major leagues yet. That's
right.
The problem.
Yes.
They have players. It's not like they don't have anything. They have prospects. We know that. They're just not ready to be at the major league level yet.
Yeah, and there's no need to rush those guys right now. I mean, team's playing so poorly, you know, they're a game and a half out of first. We're turning into July. You know, I'm not pulling the panic button just yet, but
I'm not either. I'm honestly okay because I looked. They were 12-15 this month.
Mm-hmm.
They were 9-19 in May last year.
Yeah.
Great
stat.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic.
Talk to me in a month from now if this continues by the 31st of July or whatever that day is, then we got some bigger issues on our hands. But let's get a couple of guys back. Let's see where everything is, and then they're going to have to further guide because what it is more than anything, it's that it's the 40-man roster that's complicated.
Yeah.
You can't afford right now, even if you wanted to upgrade the lineup. Baby's out of options, excuse me, in the minor leagues.
Right.
You send him down, he's gone.
Yeah.
You need Ronnie Mauricio. Luis Angel Acuna is in AAA to play every day and get ready to major leagues. Jeff, in my opinion, Jeff McNeil's days are ending. This is probably going to be it for him here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
So it's just a matter of putting a couple of pieces in place. The infield's going to look a little bit different next year because I think we're starting to see now Vientos probably better off as a full-time DH, unless it's our lefty pitcher, because Beatty does not really hit lefties great. So you could always platoon him there.
Yes.
Starling Marte won't be part of this team. So there's going to be some things that are going to look a little bit different. And maybe Acuna will be ready next year to take on a role at second base. And then you could bring in another super utility guy. Maybe not him, but a guy like a Jose Iglesias. Yeah, you miss his spark right now, but if you had him here, you're definitely setting some things back for guys who are going to be here longer than a 35-year-old traveling player.
Absolutely. John, one last thing before I let you go. You can't talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates without Dave Parker, who's going into the Hall of Fame next month.
And, yeah.
And that poor guy, he passed away early yesterday. And I know they had a short tribute in the park to him. Did they spend any more time on it, or was it just a little thing, I'm curious, before the game?
No, they showed it before the game, but then the rain delay, I think, threw some of that stuff off.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm older than you. I'll tell you, when I was, you know, 11, 12 years old, watching Dave Parker was just unbelievable. I mean, he, five-tool guy, for a huge guy, could run, yeah, could throw. If anybody ever wants to watch baseball highlights, look at his throw in the 79 All-Star game from Seattle. One of the greatest throws you'll ever see in any setting, and that's when they really played the game.
Yeah, the one thing being here this weekend, it just, you wish this team was good consistently, because
yeah,
if they're good year to year and the ownership spends money, it's a great place to watch a baseball game. They'd be selling that place out. There's a lot of history here that people don't realize with baseball.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that did in the 90s they got relevant again, but in the late 70s the We Are Family, and I mean that was for people my age, you know, in my mid to late 50s, that was just some fun stuff. But John, thanks again so much for everything.
Yeah, one last thing we forgot.
Yeah, absolutely, go.
The retirement of number 17.
Yes.
Oh, that honestly killed it. Matt Martin.
Oh, that's right, yeah, we got to bring that up again.
One of my favorite people to ever wear the Islanders uniform. Yes, he didn't score 30 goals a season, but, boy, he was fun. And let me tell you something, one of the nicest professional athletes I've ever met,
yes,
and ever dealt with. I had looked at some old pictures I had with him. Happy that he's still going to be working for the team. I think his presence, his role, we don't really know what his role is yet, but we know he's going to continue to do great things in the community. Long Island's home for him, so this is just a natural fit. I think he'll be in the Islanders Hall of Fame. I think that's going to happen. They're going to have to do something soon, because between him and Josh Bailey and probably Cal Clutterbuck, they're long overdue for some sort of honoring like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely time. We'll talk more about Matty Martz the next time we have you on. John, thanks again. Safe travels home, and we'll talk soon.
Yes.
All right. Johnny Sticks, as well as Johnny Baseballs tonight. Thanks to Brian Graves behind the glass, as always. Cappy, Chris Caputo, get home safe from Pittsburgh. We'll see you in 2 weeks. And everyone, stay cool out there in WGBB Sports Talk Land.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.